This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Here we go. Tuesday, March 18th, a brief respite between St. Patrick's and St. Joseph's Day. We had a nice conversation about the history of the Irish yesterday, and you can go to WWL.com, click on my name if you like, and find that segment and listen to it, or you can always download the Odyssey app and use the rewind feature. This week is going to be just beautiful. And before you know it, as we approach the end of March here, it's going to turn hot and humid and be brutally hot and humid during the summertime. So I would just suggest, if you can, get out and enjoy this weather if you can. Highs in the mid-70s today and tomorrow. Then a little cool front comes through, 66 for a high Thursday. Windy as well, 68 Friday, 75 Sunday, 74 Sunday. So 75 Saturday, yeah, 74 Sunday. So the weather for the parade should be great. Let's talk about tariffs. So right now it's a little bit chilly, 51 degrees. Let's talk about tariffs and manufacturing and so forth. Our guest is Willie Shee, a professor of management practice at Harvard Business School. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. I'm well. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for taking the time with us today. Let's talk about, and I'm looking at a story here about President Trump and American manufacturing and trying to, I guess, bring manufacturing back to the United States. And I think one thing that I've not really heard talked of here is a time frame for that to happen, because you're talking about companies reacting to tariffs and then making long-term capital decisions, right, on capital investment. Address all
right.
that, if you will, Professor.
Well, you know, companies have to plan for the long term. So when we have an environment like we do today where, you know, today there's going to be a tariff, and then tomorrow maybe we back off, and then the day after it's something different. We have an environment with a lot of uncertainty. So right now, the way most companies are responding to tariffs are, well, let me import as much as I can before those tariffs hit, but I'm not making any decisions until I get a little clarity on, you know, what the long-term environment looks like.
I was reading a story here from CNN about Americans could wind up with inferior cars at higher prices. And this goes to what you told us about parts crossing the border back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And got me to thinking about back in the day, American manufacturers had a lot of trouble with imports, or at least it cut into their market share, because at that time, the imports were a superior product. And I guess subsequently, and you can correct me, Professor, if I'm wrong on any of this, it's just my memory. At some point, they became hybrids, the vehicles did, and a combination of, it's hard to tell what's an American car and what's a foreign car because of some foreign cars are made here. Parts come from different areas, as you said, cross the border back and forth. And I think, at least from my perception, the competition kind of all blended together, because there's not a lot of difference between a Chevy or an Audi other than Prestige, or maybe a Ford or a Jaguar, whatever you want to say, because it seems as though the manufacturing, the parts, et cetera, have improved. And my concern here is that we could go back to a situation where we had a foreign product as opposed to a domestic product, and consumers shopped and voted with their wallets and decided to get the car that was more dependable. Am I making stuff up in my head here? Does any of that resonate?
No, Tommy, I think you have a good sense of history. What happened is back in the 1970s was when we first saw this onslaught of inexpensive Japanese vehicles from
Toyotas
companies
like, and Datsun, right?
You bet. Okay, and they were flooding into the country. Okay, and the Detroit makers looked at that and said, "Huh, it must be unfair competition, right?" It never occurred to them that maybe they could make a superior product. Okay, so then what happened is we had a lot of import limitations. There were voluntary quotas and stuff like that, which actually caused, like, the Japanese makers led by Toyota, Honda, Nissan, all to set up factories in the U.S. Okay, so, I mean, actually, if you look at Toyota's factory in Georgetown, Kentucky, or, you know, Honda, who's been in Ohio for decades now, they continue to churn out very competitive sedans. Now, the challenge for the Detroit guys is they haven't been able to make competitive sedans, so even to this day, they've been kind of hiding behind pickup trucks, which is where their profits are, and pickup trucks and things like, you know, first it was the Ford Explorer, but, you know, a lot of these SUVs built on truck chassis, mm-hmm. that's where their profit has been. That's where their advantage has been. For low cost, what they've done is they've gone to, like, importing parts or even doing a lot of assembly in Mexico and Canada. Okay, so you have a lot of parts flowing in across the borders and a lot of, you know, actually assembly across the border. Okay, and then the Detroit guys have also relied on, like, foreign steel and aluminum, right? You probably saw with Ford, you know, their F-150, this is going to be like an existential crisis for them because if they have to pay tariffs on aluminum, there's a lot of aluminum in that F-150, and a lot of it comes from Canada. Okay, so now all of a sudden, you know, we got big trouble in Detroit.
So let me take a step back. As you talk about history, what led to the cessation, if you will, of Toyota, and at that time it was Datsun, then to become Nissan and Honda to a lesser extent, but then they built market share to steal share. What led them to go from beating the American manufacturers to bringing manufacturing here, I guess is what I'm trying to ask in my own clumsy.
Yeah. Well, what it was is back in the 80s, we had import quotas. Okay, so the Japanese makers led by Toyota, Honda in particular, realized that the only way they were going to grow in the U.S. was to build manufacturing plants in the U.S. Okay, and so that's what caused them to build these so-called transplant factories, and those transplant factories have actually done very well. As a matter of fact, I just visited the Toyota factory in Georgetown last summer, and, you know, they're cranking out these sedans, and I'm asking them, it's like, you know, how can you crank out sedans competitively in the U.S.? And it's like partly they got a more productive production process. They make them more efficiently. They got good design, so the sedan market is really owned by the transplants now, and not only the Japanese, but also the Koreans, right?
And Kia and whatever it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the Detroit guys really have to rely on trucks and SUVs, okay? But in the meantime, everybody has been importing parts and, you know, metals and stuff from Canada and Mexico. And so now all these tariffs are playing havoc with all that.
All right, let me take a break. A couple of questions we come back. One of which is what effect will tariffs or could tariffs have on these transplant factories? Because it seems as though import quotas are off the table because the cars are made here now. And then the second question is, I don't understand when it comes to somebody like Ford and tariffs and aluminum, this isn't a fishmonger who says, okay, you know, you go to a restaurant, you order the fish for the entree and they say market price. I don't know how, with pricing structure, Ford can plan on costs and prices and everything else and continue to manufacture when they don't know what the cost of the raw material is going to be, but I bet you can explain it to us. Willie Shih is our guest, professor of management practice at Harvard Business School. I wish everything was as simple as being a fishmonger, but it's not. 622 traffic now, WWL. 627 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Professor Willie Shih, a professor of management practice at Harvard Business School, our friend, about tariffs and And if you're just joining us, we talked about the 80s and import quotas and how Japanese car.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover, all for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something...
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and get up to 40% off with minimum purchase. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Car companies were cutting into the auto market, then they imported, then they set import quotas, and then that led to cars being manufactured here. Somebody texted in, Professor, good morning. One of my best friends has been a body shop guy for over 30 years. Worked on them all, drives a Chevy because he's just a Chevy guy, but he tells me that the Toyota product is superior in every way to any Ford, Chevy, or GM. He said they're engineered better, easier to work on compared to the U.S. brands. Also says there are more U.S.-made parts on Toyotas than there are on other vehicles. They are touting themselves as U.S. vehicles. It's hard to tell what's made in America and what's not, but in a few seconds that we have remaining here, how does Ford go about, or any manufacturer, go about planning for production and pricing and everything else? Because, as I said, it's not like the today's daily price of fish in a restaurant. How are tariffs going to affect all of that in their production plans?
Well, Tommy, that's going to be a big problem. And something that people haven't talked about much lately is tariff stacking. Okay, and tariff stacking means, wait a minute, I'm going to pay 25% tariff on the steel or aluminum, and then I'm going to pay 25% tariff on top of that if it comes from Canada. And a lot of these parts that come back and forth across the border, it's going to be an administrative nightmare just calculating what tariff is due on all these parts. You know, to answer your question, it's hard to plan right now because it changes every day. And that's why a lot of people are saying, I'm going to hold back on investment until I get some clarity on what I'm going to do, because right now you can't make any long-term plans.
So I guess somebody's advising the president on this, and he's got to believe it's going to work. As you and I have spoken about before, this happened with McKinley back in the day, but the idea then was to generate revenue for the Treasury, not to bring manufacturing back. How do you see this all playing out? How do you see it ending? What do you think the president's up to?
I wish I understood. Okay, but, you know, stuff is going to cost more, right? Because if nothing else, all this uncertainty, inability to plan, what people are going to do is they're going to have to build in some buffers on, you know, how much they charge, because they don't know how much they're going to be paying. We're already going to see this near term in the fruit and vegetable supply, you know, as we apply tariffs on stuff from Mexico, stuff like strawberries, you know, blueberries, all avocados, all those things are going to cost more, right? And in cars, it's going to take longer to play out. I predict it's going to end up costing you and me more when we buy a car.
That's not good. Thank you, Professor. Appreciate your time.
Really, on that cheerful note, look, thanks.
Look, I got a 2014 CRV. I'm going to keep driving that thing until it dies, and then I'll just pat it on the fender and say, thank you, old paint, and move on. Willie Shih, Professor of Management Practice at Harvard Business School. We'll take a break, come back, talk about the U.S. and what's going on in Yemen with the Houthis. Right now, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Dave Cohen. Tommy Tucker, WWL. It is currently about 7:40. If only 6:46, 14 till 7. We're talking about what's going on with the Houthi rebels and try to explain who the players are and what's happening here. Like I said before the break, I don't think any foreign nation or foreign enemy of the United States should doubt President Trump's resolve when it comes to taking action. Lindsey Cohn joins us, associate professor at the U.S. Naval College, where he taught strategy, international security, U.S. foreign policy, and civil-military relations. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. I'm doing well. How are you?
Lindsey, I'm sorry. They cut and pasted, and it said, I teach strategy, and I took a shot with Lindsey, and I thought it was a man, but it turned out to be you, and I'm so sorry. I apologize for that. How are you this morning?
That's okay. I'm doing great, Tommy. Thanks.
Yeah, if it's any consolation, I have the same luck at the roulette table. I always pick wrong. Let's talk about what's going on. I guess we should start with, who are the Houthi rebels, and what is their goal in all of this?
Sure. And I do first have to say, since you mentioned that I work at the Naval War College, that I'm speaking in my personal capacity and my views do not represent those of the U.S. government.
Okay.
So who are the rebels? So the Houthis are... So we're talking about the country of Yemen, which is the southwestern end of the Saudi Arabian Peninsula, the corner there, down at the edge of the Red Sea. And the Houthis are a group of people within Yemen who belong to a minority Shia sect called the Zaydis. Yemen is about two-thirds Sunni, one-third Zaydi, so it's not a tiny minority. But anyway... Since about the 1990s, when there was a conflict between the two halves of Yemen, north and south, the Houthis have been occasionally engaging in flare-ups and rebellions against the usual rule of the majority Sunni tribes. But it's important to recognize that in Yemen, this Sunni-Shia split is not the only or even most important sort of cultural split or identity. There are tribal identities, there are regional identities, there is a Yemeni identity. So it's important to recognize that this is not just a Sunni-Shia thing. There are other things going on there as well. The most recent uprising began back in the Arab Spring, or shortly after the Arab Spring. And the Houthis have since taken over a significant amount of what was North Yemen. And the recent fighting between sort of the U.S. and Israel and the U.K. and the Houthis stems from the attacks of Hamas on Israel on October 7th, 2023, and Israel's response to invade Gaza. And the Houthis have been firing at shipping in the Red Sea in support of the Palestinian cause. So that's where we are.
So it's a messy, multifaceted civil war. Is that accurate in Yemen?
Yes.
Okay.
You said it much more succinctly than I did.
I listened to what you told me. That's why, Lindsey. So when it comes to the motive here, is it a political statement or is it about just piracy and plundering?
No, it is a political statement. The Houthis are trying to establish themselves as the legitimate government of all of Yemen. That is contested, right? There is still another government claiming that they are the legitimate government of Yemen. From the Houthi perspective, these attacks show military capability. They show a solidarity with a pan-Arab cause, that is the Palestinian cause. And from the Houthi perspective, this is, number one, putting them on the map in the Arab world and giving them what you might call street cred or just legitimacy as a group that could and should be recognized as the government of Yemen. Also, you know, fighting against the U.S. and Israel is another sort of source of legitimacy for them with certain audiences in the region.
It's the Gulf of Aden. Is that where they're active in the Red Sea as well?
That's correct, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So would changing it to the Gulf of America change anything? I'm just kidding. I'm making a joke. When it comes to the effect on international shipping, in addition to there's a military aspect of this, and there's a commercial commercial shipping aspect of this, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Tell me about it.
Yeah. So the obviously the Red Sea, the Gulf of Aden, is the mouth of the route to the Suez Canal, to and from the Suez Canal. So this is an extremely important shipping region. I'm sure we all remember when the Suez Canal was blocked a couple of years ago and sort of everything stopped. The Houthis are targeting, they claim, and so far it has been pretty accurate, they claim that they are targeting only shipping related to Israel. And since the U.S. and U.K. were supporting Israel, U.S. and U.K. shipping as well. They have tried to reassure the European Union that they're not targeting anybody else. The European Union is skeptical. But even if they're only targeting certain ships, it still disrupts everything, right? So it does make shipping companies much more concerned about going through that route. So that means longer shipping times. Insurance rates go up. So it makes things more expensive and it makes things more difficult. Now, the U.S. has been under President Biden and now under President Trump. Well, under President Biden, the U.S. was trying to shoot down a lot of the missiles that the Houthis were shooting at shipping. So very, very few ships were actually sunk, which is good. But it takes a lot of time and effort and resources to do that. The Trump administration has not been shooting down incoming missiles because the Houthis have not been shooting at anything since the ceasefire in Gaza. But they threatened to start shooting again, given the current Israeli blockade on aid to Gaza. So they threatened to start shooting again, and the Trump administration said, well, we're going to shoot first. And they have targeted sites in Yemen, which the Biden administration did as well. But the Biden administration was doing both sort of shooting down incoming missiles and targeting sites in Yemen. The Trump administration, as of right now, is targeting sites in Yemen because there aren't any missiles coming at ships right now.
Well, let me take a break. We're talking about a multifaceted, messy civil war in Yemen that led to the rise of the Houthi rebels affecting shipping in the Gulf of Aden and the Red Sea. When we come back, we'll talk about civilian casualties and the role of Iran and more with Lindsey Cohn, our guest, associate professor at the U.S. Naval War College, teaching strategy, international security, U.S. foreign policy, civil-military relations. To be clear, these are her opinions and is not that of the U.S. government. 6:53, 7 till 7, traffic now, WWL. 6:58, Tommy Tucker, WWL, about 90 seconds left with Lindsey Cohn, associate professor at the U.S. Naval War College. He teaches strategy, international security, foreign policy, military relations. Her opinions are those of herself, not the government. But Professor, let me get to this real quick. So yeah. You're talking about 53 people were killed, including children, wounding others. When it comes to Dresden in World War II, the U.S. and the Allies killed 25,000 civilians, over 200,000 in Nagasaki and Hiroshima. War is a dirty business. Civilian casualties, is it different when it comes to something like this or not?
In terms of effect, I don't think it's likely to have much effect. So there are sort of three possible aims the Trump administration might have with this. One would be to deter the Houthis from further attacks. Another would be to degrade their ability to do further attacks. And the third one is kind of to get at Iran via the Houthis. The deterrence mission, I don't think, is going to work. It didn't work with the Biden administration. They're already responding. So there's, you know, thousands, hundreds of thousands of Yemenis have died in the last 10 years during the civil war. This kind of civilian casualty rate is not going to get them to stop doing this.
Thank you, Professor. We'll talk again.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
So I read in USA Today that the majority of people stop GLP-1 weight loss injection shots in a year. Now, what's concerning is if you get off GLP-1s, there's a real chance you can gain all the weight back. The solution? Alma said, a natural superfood protein shake. University studies show it optimizes your metabolism so you can lose weight easily, and Alma said it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Use Alma said with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
March Madness is here, and if you want to enhance the experience, join me, Gary Parrish, and my colleague Matt Norlander on the ION College Basketball Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. We have new episodes at least 3 times a week and at the end of every night of the NCAA tournament. So before you go to bed, hang with us or know we'll be there when you awake. We'll break down games, make picks against the spread. Most of all, we'll have a blast. So join us on the ION College Basketball Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.